Lecture 6, Positive and Negative Emotionality.
A big part of who you are as a person depends on the kinds of emotions that you experience as you walk through life. Are you generally an upbeat, happy, and satisfied sort of person? Or do you lean more in the irritable, unhappy direction? And whichever it is, do you tend to experience emotions many times each day? Or are you generally in a relatively neutral mood with only occasional positive and negative emotional reactions? When you do feel happy or angry or nervous or whatever, how strong are your emotions? And when an emotion arises, does it generally pass quickly, or do you take a long time to get over it? People differ from each other in all of these ways, in the emotions they experience, how much of the time they're in an emotional state, the strength of their feelings, and how long their emotions last. And your own emotional pattern is an important part of who you are. If you experienced different kinds of emotions than you tend to experience, or if their intensity changed, or they lasted longer, you would be a rather different sort of person. Psychological differences among people often reflect differences in their typical patterns of emotional experience. So we're going to turn to the emotional aspects of personality. In this lecture, we'll look at the general tendencies to experience positive and negative emotions. Later, we'll look at the degree to which people experience some specific emotions, such as social anxiety, embarrassment, anger, and guilt. But to begin, we need to take a look at what emotions are. We experience emotions all the time without thinking very much about what's actually going on or why we feel whatever we're feeling. Emotions are controlled by very primitive systems in the brain that evolved to help animals deal quickly and automatically with threats and opportunities that they confront. Some emotions assist animals in dealing with threats and challenges to their well-being, both physical threats and social threats. And other emotions guide animals' behaviors in ways that help them capitalize on opportunities or benefits, whether those are physical benefits, such as finding food, or social benefits, such as bonding with another member of the species. Of course, emotions are sometimes in reaction to perceived threats or opportunities that in fact might not be real. So an animal might be frightened by a sound that doesn't actually reflect a threat. And in the case of human beings, we have many, many emotional reactions that don't reflect actual threats or opportunities, because we can conjure up all kinds of things in our minds that evoke strong emotions. We'll come back to that later. I suspect that when you think of having an emotion, you think mostly of the feelings that you get when you're sad or happy or angry or whatever. And every emotion does have a particular feeling state associated with it. But researchers who study emotion view emotions as more complex than just the feelings that you have. In fact, if emotions wouldn't help us much if they just made us feel good or bad, but didn't prompt us to behave in ways to respond to the perceived threat or opportunity. So each emotion is associated with a motive or an impulse to behave in a particular way. This motive or urge to act is often called the emotion's action tendency. If you start watching yourself closely when you feel emotions, you'll find that your emotions are almost always accompanied by an urge to behave in a particular way. For example, what urge, what action tendency do you have when you experience fear? What do you want to do when you're afraid of somebody? Pretty clearly, the action tendency for fear is to get away from whatever it is you're afraid of, to avoid it if it's not already there, or to get away from it if it's physically present. Or what about disgust, such as the disgust you feel when you see something really stinky and nasty? What's the behavioral urge? It's to avoid the nasty substance. For jealousy, When some third party seems to be interfering with your relationship with someone, the action tendency is to eliminate the rival. I don't mean to kill him or her, just to do things so that the rival doesn't undermine your relationship. For happiness, the action tendency seems to be to keep doing whatever you're doing. For anger, it's to strike out, to eliminate some barrier to a goal. For guilt, it's to repair whatever harm you've caused. You get the point. Each emotion has an action tendency. We don't always act on the urge, of course. In fact, we often try to consciously override an emotion's action tendency. Sometimes we make ourselves move toward things that scare us, or we deal with disgusting substances, even while we're gagging, and we usually resist striking out when we're angry. But if you observe yourself closely, the urge is still there. So differences in people's emotional tendencies not only mean that they feel differently inside as they go through life, but also that they behave differently as well. Emotional differences among people are accompanied by behavioral differences because the emotions involve motives to react in particular ways. The most basic emotional differences among people reflect two traits that are called positive affectivity and negative affectivity, which are nothing more than the general tendencies to experience positive and negative emotions. Psychologists sometimes use the word affect with an A, A-F-F-E-C-T, to refer to good and bad feelings. So they sometimes talk about positive affect, pleasant feelings, and negative affect, unpleasant feelings. So positive affectivity is the degree to which people tend to experience pleasant feelings. And negative affectivity is the degree to which people tend to experience negative feelings. In an average week, for example, how much of the time do you feel good and how much of the time do you feel bad emotionally? Now, you might think that the degree to which you typically have positive feelings is simply the inverse of the degree to which you typically have negative feelings. People naturally assume that if a person tends to experience positive emotions a lot, then he or she probably doesn't experience many negative emotions, and vice versa. But this is absolutely not true. In fact, the traits of positive affectivity and negative affectivity are virtually unrelated to each other. How much you feel good is not inversely related to how much you feel bad. Positive affectivity and negative affectivity are relatively independent traits. So people can score low on both positive and negative affectivity, not experiencing either positive or negative emotions very often, or they can score high on both, being high in both positive and negative affectivity. And of course, they can be low on one and high on the other. They can feel good a lot, but feel bad only rarely, or they can feel bad a lot and rarely feel good. But how can that be? Why wouldn't the tendency to experience positive and negative emotions be inversely related to each other? Let me answer this question in two ways. One, commonsensically, and the other, biologically. First, most people reason that if people aren't in a positive state, then they must be in a negative state. And if that's true, then the more you feel good, the less you should feel bad. But in fact, most of the time, we aren't in any emotional state at all. We aren't feeling anything, good or bad. Remember that emotions arise in response to perceived threats and opportunities. So if we're just doing the dishes, or taking a shower, or driving to work, we're often not in any emotional state. We might be, but not necessarily. Everyone has large segments of each day when they aren't in either a positive or negative state. So feeling more positive doesn't necessarily mean that they feel less negative. The second thing is that people often assume that we have one big brain system that controls all of our emotions, positive and negative. But positive and negative emotions are, to an extent, managed by different parts of the brain, and they operate somewhat separately. You have certainly had times in which you experienced both positive and negative emotions at exactly the same time. You can both be very happy and very sad about something because it has both positive and negative consequences. You might eagerly want something to happen, a positive emotion, but be anxious about it as well, a negative emotion. Likewise, nostalgic memories are often tinged with both happy thoughts and sadness. We talk about something being bittersweet. It made us happy and sad at the same time. So, the degree to which people experience positive emotions isn't very strongly related to the degree to which they experience negative emotions. Okay, let's take a look specifically at negative affectivity. By definition, people who are high in negative affectivity tend to experience more unpleasant emotional states than people who are low in negative affectivity. Negative affectivity can be viewed as the emotional component of the broader trait of neuroticism, which involves other features, such as a sense of vulnerability and pessimism and self-consciousness, that are not part of the conceptualization of negative affectivity. Researchers have conducted experience sampling studies in which they measured participants' overall level of negative affectivity in advance. And then they sent the participants signals via an electronic beeper at random intervals throughout the day and asked them to rate the emotions that they were experiencing at that moment. Not surprisingly, when they get beeped, people who score higher in negative affectivity are more likely to report that they are experiencing an unpleasant emotion than people who score lower in negative affectivity. And people who are high in negative affectivity not only experience negative emotions more often, but their emotional reactions are stronger as well. So upsetting events have a greater impact on people who are high in negative affectivity. People high in negative affectivity not only experience more negative emotion, but their pervasive negative affect taints their judgments of other things. When any of us are in a bad mood, we tend to react more negatively to everything, right? Well, because people high in negative affectivity are often in a negative state, they have more negative reactions to many things in their lives. So, they tend to be less happy with their jobs, and they're less happy with their friends, and they're even less happy with their marriages. One study found that scores on a measure of negative affectivity strongly predicted ratings of marriage satisfaction. What that suggests is that a good chunk of unhappiness in marriage may be traceable to people's personalities rather than to anything in particular that's happening in the relationship. So, not surprisingly, people high in negative affectivity report less satisfaction with their lives overall than people who are lower in negative affectivity. Negative affectivity is a pretty stable trait, even over long periods of time. One study showed that people who were high in negative affectivity as young adults were likely to remain high on the characteristic 20 years later. And even more striking, negative affectivity measured in adolescence predicted how satisfied people were with their jobs over 30 years later. Given this level of stability, you probably won't be surprised to learn that negative affectivity has a strong genetic basis. Presumably, some people's brains are simply wired in a way that makes negative emotions more likely. So, wherever you fall on negative affectivity, low, medium, or high, it's not going to change a great deal without some work on your part. It can change some, but it takes intentional effort. Just as people differ in their tendency to experience negative emotions, they also differ in their tendency to experience positive emotions. And we call this trait positive affectivity. Let me remind you that positive affectivity is not the opposite of negative affectivity. A person could be low in negative affectivity, that is, not feel many negative emotions, yet not feel many positive emotions either. Or a person could be high in negative affectivity, but also experience positive emotions a great deal as well. You can probably imagine what people high in positive affectivity are like. They're upbeat and cheerful and optimistic, and they tend to get excited and enthused more easily than people who are low in positive affectivity. They not only feel good in general, but they also tend to experience specific positive emotions, such as happiness, joy, pride, and inspiration, more often than people low in positive affectivity do. Just as people high in negative affectivity are less satisfied with their marriages and jobs, people higher in positive affectivity are more satisfied with most aspects of their lives. In these kinds of studies, researchers assess people's emotional tendencies well in advance of measuring their satisfaction with their relationship or job or whatever, to eliminate the possibility that people are having more positive emotions simply because their marriages or jobs are going well. By measuring people's positive affectivity months, if not years earlier, we can be more certain that people who are dispositionally high in positive affectivity judge their lives more positively. If we look inside the minds of people high in positive affectivity, we can get hints about what they might be doing to experience more positive emotions than the rest of us do. Not surprisingly, people who are higher in positive affectivity cope better with the problems they confront in life. They think about problems in a more optimistic and problem-solving sort of way. But they also behave proactively in ways that promote positive emotions, even when things are going well. For example, people high in positive affectivity tend to savor their positive emotions by paying conscious attention to pleasurable experiences. How often have you eaten a meal without paying attention to the taste of your food, or walked along on a beautiful, warm day without actually enjoying the feel of the sun or the breeze? By savoring pleasant experiences, people high in positive affectivity enhance and prolong their good feelings, even in rather ordinary situations. In everyday life, people often think about their emotional lives in terms of how happy they are. So let's extend what we know about positive and negative affectivity to the topic of happiness. People often use the word happy in two somewhat different ways. Sometimes we use the word to refer to a momentary emotional experience. You might feel happy when you get the job you wanted, or your team wins the big game. But sometimes we use happy to refer to something like a personality characteristic. Some people are generally happier overall than other people are. We're talking here about happiness in this second sense, individual differences among people in happiness. Studies show that the degree to which people are happy, and again I mean happy overall, is a function of three things. Given what we've been talking about in this lecture, the first one is obvious. Dispositionally happy people score higher in positive affectivity than less happy people do. They experience positive emotions more often than people who are less happy. But importantly, they don't just experience more happiness. They have more of all positive emotions. Not just happiness, but also gratitude, amusement, hope, joy, contentment, pride, and so on. Happy people also experience fewer negative emotions. They're lower in negative affectivity. That might seem obvious, but it shows that being a happy person isn't based just on how good and happy you feel, but also on feeling relatively few negative emotions. It also helps to explain why many people who have lots of good things in their life and who have many positive experiences aren't necessarily happy overall. No matter how many good things they have, people usually aren't particularly happy overall if they're high in negative affectivity. Or to say it differently, truly happy people tend to be both high in positive affectivity and low in negative affectivity. But that's still not usually enough to be a dispositionally happy person. In addition, happy people feel that their life is going well. They're satisfied and content with their life. Of course, we feel more satisfied with life on some days than on others. But if we ask people, in general, how satisfied are you with your life? Or we ask, how close is your life to your ideal? Some people consistently report greater life satisfaction than other people do. Being happy seems to require a broad, positive evaluation of one's life in general. Now, here's the important point. Given that people's positive and negative emotions strongly depend on aspects of their personalities, and that their satisfaction with life is also related to their general tendencies to experience positive and negative affect, then their overall happiness is partly a function of their personality as well. This isn't how most people think about happiness. Most of us assume that our happiness depends on what happens to us in life, how our lives are going. And in part, of course, that's true. But a sizable portion of happiness and unhappiness is due to personality factors, to people's characteristic ways of responding emotionally and evaluating what happens to them. And it's not just positive and negative affectivity. Other traits also play a role. As I noted earlier, people higher in extroversion tend to be happier on average. And some of their happiness may be due to their social life, rather than to the fact that they are dispositionally high in positive affectivity. In fact, even introverts feel happier when they behave in an extroverted fashion. Highly agreeable people are also happier than less agreeable people are, probably because they have more positive social relationships. And people high in conscientiousness tend to be happier than less conscientious people because they don't create problems for themselves by being irresponsible and undependable. We have many personality dispositions that combine to influence how happy we tend to be, regardless of how our life is going at the moment. We've known for many years that negative emotions, such as anger and stress, depression, loneliness, are bad for people's health. But researchers have discovered more recently that positive affectivity and happiness also contribute to good health. For example, happier people show a higher resistance to infectious illnesses. They're less likely to develop coronary heart disease. And older adults who are higher in positive affectivity tend to live longer than older people who score lower in positive affectivity. The evidence for a link between unhappiness and cancer is mixed. Some studies show a connection, but others don't. Of course, if we measure people's happiness and health at the same time, finding a relationship between happiness and health could reflect the fact that being healthy makes people happier, which is, of course, true, but not very interesting. But controlled laboratory experiments and longitudinal studies that span across many years have provided compelling evidence that happiness actually causes people to be healthier. For example, one experimental study measured people's happiness and then injected them with the cold virus. The results showed that happier people were less likely to come down with a cold. And if they did get sick, happier people tended to have less severe symptoms, and they were sick for fewer days than unhappy people were. Something about being happy buffers people against getting sick. Other studies have measured positive affectivity or happiness at one point in time and then followed people for many years afterwards. In one unusual study involving a sample of nuns, researchers showed that how happy nuns were when they were in their 20s predicted how long they lived. On average, happy nuns outlived unhappy nuns by about 10 years. Let me wrap up this lecture on positive and negative emotionality with a curious characteristic that was identified only recently. First, I'd like you to rate your attitudes towards several things. You don't have to actually write your answers down. Just think how favorable or unfavorable your attitude is toward each of these things I'm going to list on a 7-point scale, where 1 equals extremely unfavorable, 4 equals neutral, and 7 equals extremely favorable. Okay, how favorable is your attitude toward bicycles? From extremely unfavorable to extremely favorable. What about your attitude toward camping? Yes, camping. Unfavorable or favorable? Cold showers. Doing crossword puzzles. Unfavorable or favorable? What about your attitude toward Japan? Or receiving criticism on a 1-7 scale? Soccer. The sport, soccer. Taxes. Yes, your attitude toward taxes is probably unfavorable, but how unfavorable? I'll stop there. These are some of the items from the dispositional attitude measure, which assesses people's general tendency to like versus dislike various stimuli. Now, normally, psychologists measure people's attitudes toward particular things. Your attitude toward capital punishment, or cats, or homeschooling. But researchers have recently discovered that people have a tendency to have attitudes for or against things in general. You wouldn't think that the tendency to have a favorable view of bicycles ought to relate to attitudes toward cold showers or Japan. But they do. Because people tend to have generally positive or negative attitudes toward things. By the way, the sample items I gave you earlier are just a few of the items from the dispositional attitude measure, so there's no way for you to tell whether you have a more positive or negative dispositional attitude than other people. But I hope you get the idea. As you might expect, the tendency to have favorable or unfavorable attitudes toward many things, is related to positive and negative affectivity. People who are lower in negative affectivity and higher in positive affectivity do tend to have more favorable attitudes toward just about everything. This tendency to have favorable versus unfavorable attitudes also correlates with the trait of openness. People who score higher in openness have more positive attitudes toward most things than people who are lower in openness. In one study, participants who thought that they were participating in a consumer opinion study read some positive and negative reviews about a bogus microwave oven. The Monahan LPI 800 compact 2/3 cubic foot 700 watt microwave oven. And after reading these reviews, they rated their views of the oven. How much did they like the characteristics of this microwave? Results showed that people's scores on the dispositional attitude measure, their general tendency to like or dislike stuff, like crossword puzzles and cold showers and taxes, correlated with their ratings of the fake microwave. When we like or dislike something, we have the sense that our reaction is based solely on the characteristics of whatever it is that we like or dislike. But clearly, our personality tendency to be a general liker or disliker also plays a role. And your dispositional attitude has behavioral consequences as well. People who have more positive attitudes, who like more things, engage in more different activities in a given week than people who have less favorable attitudes. They don't spend more time doing things overall. They just spread their time across more different activities, presumably because they like more things. So as a result, people with a positive dispositional attitude may end up somewhat more skilled at more different tasks because they try more activities. In contrast, people with a less positive dispositional attitude like fewer things, so they may engage in fewer activities. But when they do find an activity they like, they invest more time in that particular activity and develop deeper knowledge and more skill in that activity compared to people who spread their interests around more. In many ways, the quality of our personal lives depends on the kinds of emotions that we regularly experience. A person who experiences many positive emotions and relatively few negative emotions has a very different kind of life than a person who has mostly negative feelings. And as we have seen, our emotional tendencies affect not only how we feel, but also how we view just about everything in our life. So happiness depends both on people's personal characteristics and on the conditions of their lives. Researchers have tried to put a number on this to give us some idea of how much of our happiness and life satisfaction is due to the events that we experience and how much is due to our personal characteristics. Different experts come up with somewhat different numbers, but they agree that somewhere between 30% and 50% of the variability in happiness across people is due to people's personality characteristics rather than to the objective quality of their lives. Now, this may sound like really bad news to those of us who are inclined to be higher in negative affectivity, but what it actually means is that some of us just have to be a little more intentional about managing our emotions than other people do. As we'll discuss later, although personality is somewhat stable, it's not etched in stone. So we all have a certain amount of latitude in managing the parts of our personalities that create problems for us.